Welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast, a podcast incorporating narratives about facing and navigating adversity, a mixture of people, their experiences, and professional psychological discussion. I'm Dr. Tara Quinn-Tirillo. I'm a qualified and regulated psychologist with over 20 years' experience of mental health, disability, and human behaviour. I want to share people's stories of navigating adversity in the hope that through being heard, a dose of compassion and some understanding, we can help others in the face of adversity too.
Hi, welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. And super interesting guest today. We're going to get on so well. I just know it. I have Thomas Tenney with me. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what's brought you on podcast today.
Sure. Well, I'd like to say I have an incredibly interesting story, but I don't. I'm a normal person going through life, struggling through life like everyone else. And I think that's what makes these kind of conversations meaningful, because we hear so many stories about people who, you know, hiked up to the Mount Everest with one leg or blind or did these amazing things. They're awesome. But it's always good to have conversations with people who are real as well, everyday people. I am a father, a husband. I have four sons who I live vicariously through them and watching them wrestle and cross country. I was a therapeutic foster parent for 5 years and had some really poignant experiences that helped shape me to who I am today. Yeah. Outside of that, I'm an author. I'm a huge college American football fan. And I love just researching compassion specifically and you know, creating meaningful connections between people and helping facilitate healing. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
So you are a interesting person with a background that I love, because this isn't today's episode, isn't about I've had this adversity, what have I learned? But in a way, you have a backstory, but I love the fact that is it right to use that word? Kind of, it's everyday stuff that humans can go through and what can we learn from it, which is the premise of this podcast. But sometimes I have people who have very, very kind of loaded stories and you know, and it's very much around that. Today, and this is, I was just talking about this before we hit record, we are going to talk about acceptance and commitment therapy, which is something I practice over here in the UK and have done for about probably 10 years now. And before that, I was very much CBT, kind of narrative therapy, psychodynamic therapy. And it was quite honestly life-changing when I discovered it. And now it's probably the most frequently occurring type of therapy or the model that I use. And I bring it into almost every single podcast, which I hadn't realized until I booked you on the show and thought, my gosh, is this the first time that I'm going to actually really deconstruct what it is? Because to me, it is something you live, not do. And it is, I think, possibly the most helpful approach for people to be leading more value, authentic, laden lives, meaning-making and compassion, things that we've already talked about off camera. So yeah. I know you have a book as well. We're going to kind of bring two paths together on this podcast, hopefully in a nice, succinct way. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what got you into acceptance and commitment therapy, and what is it to you?
Sure. So I've always been fascinated with psychology. My degree is in psychology, and I love trying to figure out what makes people tick. Yeah. Isn't it interesting that our brain is the least understood organ in our body, and yet it holds all the, you know, all the answers to why we are who we are, right?
Yes.
And so at a time when my life was going through some personal struggles and trying to find answers, as many of us do, and turned to self-help books. My brother suggested a book called A Liberated Mind by Dr. Yes. Stephen C. Hayes. Fantastic book. And it opened up my eyes to the concept of an objective curiosity. Yes. Of what I'm experiencing. Because, Tara, up to this point, I tied my identity to my bad habits.
Yes.
Tied my identity to what I was suffering. And, you know, it's so common for us to say, I am angry. I am sad.
Yes.
I am, you know, whatever that term is, is we tie it to identity. And Dr. Stephen C. Hayes opened my eyes and said, actually, let's take an objective, curious perspective. Let's talk about our human body and what its goal is.
Yes.
Its goal is to have homeostasis. We want to have the proper temperature. We want to have the proper satiation. We want to have the proper levels of cortisol and serotonin and dopamine. Sometimes life comes and hits us from the side and something happens we're not expecting. And so what do? Our body responds with cortisol, flushes your system, says fight or flight. And back in the olden days, we had to worry about lions and things attacking us, where today it's more so psychological. Yes. And our brain can't tell the difference. And so what he's taught me is to go, okay, instead of saying I'm angry, why don't we change the words to I'm feeling anger?
Yes.
I'm feeling anxiety. And being able to have compassion for our body and go, okay, my body's just trying to find homeostasis. I accept that my body is trying to do this. And I appreciate my body's capability of trying to find that. Instead of fighting it, right? You mentioned, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is honestly the most common one right now, right?
Yeah. Most people are kind of familiar with that term, aren't they, as well?
Yeah. And it's the concept is you have an illogical thought process and then you replace it with a logical.
Yes.
But it's kind of like explaining to somebody who's afraid of elephants to stop thinking about elephants. Yeah. They're going to think about elephants and it's not going to heal them. And so backtrack to my story, I started to learn how to accept what I was feeling and to not have shame. Because shame just...
That's the key thing. Yes. Yeah.
Right. And so in doing that, I created one day I was like, I'm done. I'm so frustrated. I didn't have answers. And so one night I had a very poignant dream and I wrote a story about it. But how I came up with the story, Tara, was I created a Google alert for certain phrases. And I left alone for 2 years, as many of us do. We have good intentions and then life gets distracting.
Yes.
And then one day my Google said, you're running out of memory. My screen just went black. That's weird. You can still see me, right?
I can still see you, yes.
Sorry.
Don't worry, I can edit it back in as well.
So I created this Google alert, and 2 years later, Google said, you're running out of memory. So I thought, well, I hate to have wasted all these Google alerts.
Yes.
So I looked and I read every article on the Google alert. The phrases were, come unto me, that all you that labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And I read people's blogs, their video, watched their videos, listened to their podcasts, and it opened my eyes to how much suffering is going on in this world.
Yeah.
There's so much suffering, and I wasn't alone. And so kind of with those two things together, I decided to write a short story around the principle of my dream, about a young man who sees the world for a certain perspective, sees people around him from a not so curious perspective.
Yes.
And more so judgmental. And then through a dream, he learns more about the burdens and trials that he experiences himself and is able to utilize ACT principles to turn them into something of meaning and value instead of fighting them, and utilizing that to help other people or to see them from a different perspective when he woke up. So that's kind of how I came into it, and I try to practice it daily. But as you are well aware, it's often those who need it the most, who struggle with it the most, who try to incorporate it.
Being compassionate with that. The thing that I love about ACT therapy is it isn't about always having to be perfect, know what's happening, and, you know, not going down that path. It's about being open and curious and going, oh, I got hooked with that particular difficult thought or strong emotion, and maybe I behaved in a way that might have moved me away from my values rather than towards. And it's about being compassionate with that, because there are times where we will get overpowered by negative thinking or strong emotions, and we might cope in ways that are less effective for us, mm-hmm. but having compassion with it. There's a lot, we're very quick fix as a society today. That's why I was so interested to have this discussion with you, that actually, you know, we're very solution focused, but actually if you don't know what's going on with your mind and your body, so the psychoeducation, exactly as you said at the beginning there, people don't realize this is about threat brain. This isn't about us not being good at life or not coping, but also then understanding your own individual. What is my threat brain responding to? And it's so powerful, isn't it? That simple play on words, you know, I am to I'm experiencing, or I'm noticing some anxiety. It creates what we call a bit of daylight, doesn't it? Yeah. Between what you're experiencing and how you respond.
Yeah. And one of my favorite stories on as the liberated mind, he was talking about a counselor who utilized ACT therapy, and she went to a lady's home who suffered from agoraphobia. She had fear of crowds and open spaces as well.
Yes.
And she sat down with her. She goes, okay, this is going to be uncomfortable. I would like to understand what you're feeling right now when you feel that fear. Let's go ahead and go there, because we're in a safe spot. We're home. And I would like to fully feel what you feel. So yes. Let's lay down and do this. So they lay down and she starts to feel a little anxiety, and she's like, wait, describe it. She goes, it's gone. She's like, oh no, that's not okay. I need to understand what you're feeling. So we need to put you in an uncomfortable place to understand this. So let's go outside, which she hadn't been outside in a long time. And now I want to feel it. I want to fully embrace and experience what you're feeling. She's like, okay. So they go outside, they lay on the grass. She feels it for a second, and then she's like, oh, it's gone. It's not here. Where is it? And then the lady goes, oh no, this is not okay. We need to find this. We need to get in your car and we need to drive down to the local park. So they drive to the park. Same thing happens. She ends up across the bridge, which was her greatest fear. And she learned when she got there, she's like, what was different was I allowed myself the opportunity to safely feel it. And allow it to run its course instead of fighting it. And I love that story. Obviously, that won't be the case for all of us. But when we allow us an opportunity to put ourselves in a safe place to feel that discomfort, then we start to realize that, okay, we'll be okay. And we can take that next step of commitment to face the challenges and the discomforts in life. And I love that story that he shares in his book.
And the purpose behind that. So for that individual, we could, you know, if your brain's saying to you, look, the world's really scary, don't do this, don't do that, you know, wrap yourself up in a blanket and stay home, is what does that mean for value-based living? So one of the things about ACT therapy, and I thought we could bring this in, is why, so someone listen to this that might be experiencing someone and going, oh, I need to kind of look at this. Why not just stay home and hide where it's safe?
Mm.
What is it that ACT therapy tries to help people to focus on?
I think for me, I can only speak for me. I'm not an expert, but I can, you know, share my perspective. One of the things that it enabled me to do in facing those challenges, instead of just, you know, staying in my safe spot, was enabled me the opportunity to understand what my true values are.
Yeah.
All of us, Tara, are born with certain things that are a value to us. They're part of our identity. And if we
Absolutely. Peeled
away all of our titles, I'm a counselor, I'm a doctor, I'm a this, I'm a, you know, whatever it is, our core self includes those values.
Yes.
And those won't change. And so as we go through ACT therapy, that's one of the things I found of great value. I'm like, when it's all said and done,
yes,
if I took away all these things, who am I? What do I value?
Yes.
And sitting with that enabled me to do that and allowed me to act, because I can go, okay, I know who I am at my core, and I know this challenge that I face, that's gonna change.
Yes.
I won't change. Who I am will not change, at least as part of my core values. I'm gonna move forward with those things that are of worth and contribute to my family and my community. That's what's helped me move forward instead of.
I don't know, in kind of the American school system, in the UK, we're very goal driven. And I always use this a lot with the clients that I work with, that sometimes it's great to have goals. And sometimes we do need to have more kind of operationalized ideas of what we want to work towards. But the difficulty with goals is it also feeds into this culture of quick fix, got to get, must do. When I leave school and get these exams, then I'll get this degree and get this house. And it's all very tick box rather than values. I tend to see as the layer underneath goals, the who, what, when, where that really matters. Mm-hmm. And when we're living life and you're moving towards values as well as some goals, that's where you find purpose and meaning for me. And with all the clients that I've worked with using ACT therapy for over 10 years now, that's the thing for me that's helped make a core shift for them, that it isn't about that particular goal. It's about an authentic, meaning-laden life. So I'm kind of, I love the metaphor in ACT therapy of passengers on the bus. So you're driving your bus towards what you matter, what matters to you, what values you have. And then on the bus, you've got these passengers and they may represent difficult thoughts and feelings and experiences. And they may walk down the bus and tap you on the shoulder and say, pay attention to me. We need you to pull the bus over because this is anxiety or fear, or this is that experience that happened before. But what do we want to move towards? And that can really help people who are stuck or kind of paralyzed with, you know, debilitating anxiety or low mood. And that's the thing that really resonated with me when I first discovered ACT therapy, that even in the most difficult and even in the most dark times, there will be something that you can help move towards that can sometimes help you make room for and lean into that really tricky stuff rather than what we tend to do, which is just pull away. And that feels natural sometimes, doesn't it? To just go, no, let's just not go anywhere near it and it will hopefully go away. But the stuff doesn't. And the more we avoid, we know, the bigger the problem can get. Very cyclical. And I kind of think of it, you know, how do you bring in, if someone says, I don't know what my values are, I don't know where to start, especially if you've grown up in a culture that's very goal driven, how do you approach that with people you work with?
That's a great question. I kind of first want to kind of respond to your comment about values, because that really resonated with me, because I thought that was a great, great point. The reason why is, so I was diagnosed with ADHD late in life, and I incorporated shame with forgetting things. Yes. Because with ADHD, yes, as you're well aware, you've had multiple podcasts, decisions and memory are associated with the emotional part of your brain and not the prefrontal cortex, the logic side of things. And so for the longest time, I would set goals, yes, and then I would go to try to accomplish them, and one of two things would happen. I wouldn't accomplish it. And just feel so much shame.
Yes.
Or I would accomplish it and then feel like, oh, I still have to just move my goalpost out. Yes. With values, if I don't accomplish them, that's okay. It's part of, I look at the progress that I was able to make and tie the meaning to the value and not, yes, the task to complete. So that was a value to me, but your question circling back of how do we discover what our values are? I think we gain knowledge based on our perspective and our experiences in life. Yeah. So sometimes we have to look back and go, when was a time where I found that time went by really fast and I was engaged in something that was just bringing me when did I get in the zone? You know, our values are often tied to that. We look back at a time, just find something, they're like, wow, time went by so fast. Often our values are tied to that. Another thing is, what do I do when no one is looking that provides me meaning?
Yes, I like that.
Because it's not associated with anyone else. Because often we try identity is, how am I seen by other people?
Yes.
Well, if no one was around, what would you do that would bring you meaning and joy and, you know, yes, gratitude? That's where I find my values to lie, is asking myself, and this is the third thing, when you do something, yeah, that has meaning, ask the question why at least three times.
Yes.
So something happens, you're like, I love this. Why do you love this? Well, because it brings me joy. Why does it bring you joy? And so if you're looking for your values, find something that brings you joy and ask why until you get to that core reason. Then that's where you discover what your real value is.
And I think that's a really interesting point for people, because I know a lot of the clients that I work with initially, when I bring up the idea of values, it's almost kind of a decision paralysis. Well, I don't know, because it's a new concept, and I'm always really compassionate with people, but actually that's the bit that takes time in therapy, is reconnecting with values or discovering what they are if you've never ever been supported to look at what your values are, and that it's a process. But quite often, and I love that point you made then, that quite often a lot of the stuff that we think we value is tied up in how other people appraise us and what we think our value is to others. So I really love that, stripping it back to going, if I was on my own, because sometimes we've forgotten, we've lost sight. You know, if we become a parent, then sometimes think other things get put aside while you're parenting. You know, we're at different points of our life, we may lose touch with stuff or not have capacity, or we're overwhelmed with anxiety, so we've lost sight of our hobbies and our interests because we're so busy trying to manage the anxiety and all of the things in life. We're in a very fast-paced life these days, aren't we? We're managing multiple things on our phones. Present moment awareness is rarer, and that's one of the things that we try and work through. So starting with values, and I did that work very early on as an ACT therapist as well, is going, right, why are you here? Why is it that you're making this really big, brave decision, I always say, to look at this anxiety that's been with you a long time, or this low mood, or this trauma? And I find that bringing in values really early really helps people to go, right, I know this is going to be a hard journey, because at times it's hard really looking at and deconstructing the psychological issues that you may face. Sometimes people have known they've been there for years, but we do what we can to kind of, you know, push them away or numb them with alcohol or overeating or whatever it is. We busy ourselves sometimes to cope. And it can be really refreshing, you know, seeing someone start to reconnect with their self, as you say, that authentic self. And it's incredibly powerful. So we may work with someone, obviously, in a more therapeutic setting, but what I love about your work as well is that you do work with kind of people that's less of a therapeutic approach, but more, how do we help other people to find their authentic selves, to use principles from ACT therapy? Because it is so, I think everybody should know about ACT therapy. I think the world would be a really, probably sounds incredibly cheesy to say, but I think the world would be a really different place if people were able to kind of understand about the core principles. And we call it ACT therapy, actually, so we call it a model, really, because therapy, sometimes people think is, well, I don't need therapy, or I don't need to go and speak to somebody one-to-one about it. Yeah, and I just wondered, how do you get people that you work with to kind of think about it, who may just think, oh, well, that's just therapy, that's counselling. I don't need that. Because it can apply to everyone, and it can help even someone listening to this podcast today think differently about your relationship with yourself.
Yeah, I don't refer to it as ACT therapy ACT. I refer it to as ACT principles. Because principles are things that we can apply, insights and wisdom that we can apply to our lives that helps change us, change our perspective, change the way we feel and see ourselves. And so I never incorporate or utilize that as therapy, because there's obviously a negative stigma with it. However, you and I both know that everyone needs therapy. We all do. We all need someone to talk to or to be seen. So that's really what I've tried to do, was ask myself, how can I help people understand ACT principles with being in a safe spot? Like I mentioned, that story about the lady feeling in a safe place, a lot of us don't feel comfortable in talking to a counselor.
Yeah.
Me included. It's a scary place because it's someone you don't know.
Absolutely.
And so you need to be presented opportunities to feel safe, to be able to experience the emotions that you're feeling. And so that is kind of what has led me to do research to find out a little bit about struggles, what's the purpose of them, and what can we do with those for ourselves and for other people? So one of the things that I've done is some research on seen suffering versus unseen suffering. And there was a study that they had, I think it was like 200 people who had experienced trauma as children.
Right.
And 200 people that they were seen in their struggle, meaning they had siblings who were in the same house, they had friends, so they, obviously did a lot of interviews, and then they compared them to a group who were unseen, which means they were isolated, they were ignored, or their suffering was minimized. So they're like, oh, it's really not that big of a deal, don't worry about it. And what's so interesting.
So common, isn't it? Yes.
Oh, yeah. And what's so interesting, Tara, was the people who were seen. Now, these people weren't in counseling. They weren't. I didn't see psychologists. The only difference between the two is that their suffering was seen by somebody else, acknowledged. So when someone comes to you and says, "Oh, I'm having a hard day," the phrase, "Wow, I'm so glad that you shared that with me." Yeah. One, it acknowledges their suffering, and it doesn't use the sympathy to say, you know, "Well, at least this," or often, yes. You know, we say, "Oh, I know how you feel."
Oh, yes.
You don't want to use that phrase because nobody knows exactly how the other person feels. So those who were unseen, when they became adults, two things happen. It was more difficult for them to see others from a compassionate perspective, because what they did is they created a barrier to protect themselves.
Yeah.
I understand that very well. As a therapeutic foster parent, one of our jobs was to walk children through that barrier, let them know they were safe, break through that wall, and still be that consistent source of love. And those who were seen were able to see others from a compassionate perspective and were able to not judge others. And so what my goal is I created a nonprofit that's called Honor the Struggle. And my goal is to help people to have a safe place to be vulnerable without having to disclose anything. And so I at some point would love to tell you about a social experiment that I did. But that's really, hopefully that answered your question. I hope that did.
I think what you just said there is really powerful. Look, sometimes people in Britain particularly, so over in the UK, we are notoriously rubbish at sitting with other people's emotions. And we know that from research. We're way behind you guys in America and Northern Europe. So Brits will tend to problem solve and fix. So exactly, you know, the kind of, "Oh, I know what you need," or "Maybe you need this," or "Let's call your doctor," or "Let's get you a therapist," rather than just holding space. And actually, I don't think people realize what you just said, that you don't need necessarily to hear someone's full story. You don't have to sit with a huge amount of distress, because that will also stop people from asking, "How are you? What do you need?" Because we're not very good at sitting with distress, particularly over here in the UK. So then we won't ask. But what I love about ACT is it just deconstructs that whole myth that actually what people who are experiencing any level of distress need, to, in order to connect with other humans, we just need to hold space for them to tell us what they want without dipping in with problem solving or minimizing, "It'll be fine," or "You think that's a bad day, you should hear what my friend went through." It's just holding space, and it's really not that complex to do. And that's why I was so interested in having this discussion with you, is just making those everyday things really accessible for people. And the fact that, you know, I run a not-for-profit as well, it's an enormous amount of work to do one. And also what it says about you as an individual, that with everything else you do, you wanted to do this. And what is it? Why do that then? So why push yourself, take something else on? Why run a not-for-profit? What do you want to achieve doing that?
I think right now, more than ever, we need to be able to have meaningful connections with people.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
There was a gentleman who did a TED talk. I can't remember his name, but he talked to, his main phrase was the opposite of addiction was meaningful connection. Yeah. And there was an experiment where they had mice in this big box where they had a mouse with, I think it was liquid cocaine and water, and it would.
I've heard about this. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then what they did is they took that mouse and put him in a big environment where he had lots of mice, and he had play toys and everything that, you know, helped increase his social connections, and still put that cocaine there. He stopped. He didn't find value in it because he had meaningful connection. And so my goal is to help people have meaningful connections, not just with their close ones, but with complete strangers. Yes. So I would love to tell you about the social experiment that I had. I wanted to test this.
Yes.
I went to a local park here in Arizona, and I put up a small card table, and I put up a big sign that says, "What are you carrying?" an invitation to sit and reflect. And I had just music going on and just sat in this chair. And on the other side was a chair for someone to sit in. I sat for about half an hour, Tara. It took a little bit for people to see and understand what's going on. And people would pause, look at it, and some of them would walk off. Well, after about half an hour, Tara, this young man comes and sits down. He's covered in tattoos and piercings. You can tell he's gone through a lot in his life. He comes, he sits down, and he takes a deep breath and starts writing in this journal that I put there for him to write in. And I allowed him just for a moment just to think about his, you know, things he's going through. And I used no words. So in this experiment, I used no words. I held up another sign that says, without saying what it is, are you carrying something that most people aren't aware of? And he quietly nodded his head. And then I held up another sign that said, what would it mean to you to know somebody else carried the same burden? How might you treat them differently? And he, you know, thought for a minute, pondered about it. And then I held up another sign that said, what would it mean to you if someone was aware of your burden and stayed? And at that point, he's starting to get a little wiggly in his chair. And he turned to face the camera and said a few things regarding being grateful for what you have and really cool things he had to say. And then after that, I held up another sign and it says, I pulled out a box and put it in front of the table. And I'll describe what's in it in just a sec. But the sign said, in this box are items that represent some of the burdens that we carry. I invite you to pick up the one that best fits yours. And Tara, in this box, I have various items. So I have this doll. It's been broken up into a lot of pieces and haphazardly glued back together. I have a rock with a bunch of holes in it. I have a chain with just a big metal chain. I have wood that has a bunch of, it's hollow inside. And just various items that can represent burdens. I have handcuffs made of barbed wire.
Wow.
So he looks inside the box, and after a minute or so, he picks up the rock with a bunch of holes in it. And then I hold up a sign that says, will you stand by me for a moment and allow me to hold your burden while you hold mine?
Powerful stuff, isn't it?
What was powerful was when he went to hand me his burden, I was expecting just to stand in the, you know, front of the camera and have a montage of me holding burdens with other people. Well, when I handed my burden and he handed me his, he pulled me in and hugged me and cried for about 2 minutes straight, just bawling my shoulder. Complete stranger. I've never met this man before. But the meaning it had and how that ties to ACT therapy is we were real. We didn't allow our outside environment to affect us or judge us. He needed that. I didn't care what other people thought.
I
wanted to have that meaningful connection with this young man. And after that, you know, he sat down and told me that how much meaning that had to him, because one, it was safe. He didn't have to share what was going on. He just
absolutely.
And so I have found that's what I want, is I want people to look outside themselves instead of seeing that man on the corner of the street who's panhandling as a nuisance or annoyance. Take an objective perspective of curiosity and ask them their name. Simple as that. Hey, what's your name?
Basics of human connection.
Yeah.
Who are you? Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's what I want for my nonprofit, is for people to one, gain self-compassion for themselves, recognize their meaning, value, and you know who they really are, and then look outside themselves. So I apologize for the motions. Maybe I shouldn't apologize.
No, I
that's
think
one
it's
of the things
really,
that we,
yeah, I was going to say, catch that. Yes, that emotion is what's needed to show, because that is what represents the power of what happens there, right? That's not something you can plan for. It was authentic in the moment, especially, you know, when you've got cameras running, that it's a social experiment. People do behave differently, don't they? But that gentleman came along and allowed himself to be kind of therapeutically, we tend to call it kind of held and heard when he could have backed away. Yeah. But that's the power of human connection. Post-pandemic, particularly, we're digitally connected more than ever, but we are not connected human to human. You know, that physical touch, that being side, especially if it's right to say for men as well, to be able to be their authentic selves. And what I really was struck by there is that question, you said, you know, to be here, but that I still stay, because sometimes people will share and feel that then people won't want to be around them or that they can't hold it. It's a lot of the reason why people won't share stuff. And I think that came across. Thank you for feeling able to share it with us as well. That's the power. That both of you being able to cathart in that way as well is also part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah. And what was so cool, Tara, was it took half an hour to get somebody to have the courage to sit down and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
But after that, I had six more people within the next 10 minutes do the same thing, because they saw one person was put in a safe environment.
Yeah.
And then each time that I did that, more and more people came and sat down. I had young men, about 13 years old, group of six young men come, and it was so cool. They ride by on their skateboards, and then they stop, and one of them comes and sits down and goes through the experiment. And then when he gets done, he convinced his friends to do it. And the part that was so cool, Tara, was at the end, when the last young man did it, he stood up, and when they went to walk away, his friend put his arm around him, and he said, "Wasn't that awesome?" And he goes, "Yeah, it was." And he goes, "Good job. I knew you could do it." And then they go off and are super happy as friends. And that's what I love, is when you're willing to accept, "I'm struggling."
Absolutely that, yes.
That's healing in and of itself. And if you're that friend goes, "I don't know what to say to John. I just know he's struggling." Most of the time, you don't have to.
And that's exactly it, yes.
Most of the time, you just got to be there. I'll share one more quick story regarding that. My family was going through a very hard time. We had a loved one who was murdered, who was killed. And what do you say to somebody who's gone through something that hard? You don't know what to say. And I know people had good intentions. Sometimes they would say things that you're like, "That's really not helpful. You know, he's in a better place." Things like that just weren't comforting. But Tara, one day, we're at our house, we're, you know, cleaning stuff up, and a dear friend comes to our door, rings the doorbell, and my wife opens the door, and he just immediately starts crying. And all he says is, "I'm so sorry." And then my wife hugged him for about 5 minutes straight, and they just cried together. And then when they were done, he turned around and left. He didn't say, "What can I do?" He didn't say anything, but that alone caused so much more healing of my wife and my heart than anything he could do. So that's what I want, is people just to see, be seen in their struggle. So
it's so wonderfully simple, incredibly brave thing to do, because sometimes we can also get caught up in the, "This is what you should do. We should offer help. We should, you know, offer solutions." And that sometimes I think is the biggest barrier to people doing what's needed. And that's what I love about this idea of the nonprofit, is those young boys going off and maybe doing that for someone else, or even within that group. It's the butterfly effect. People, I don't ever think, really appreciate how powerful that is. It's not just about the individuals we're working with then, but it's what they may go on and do, and how incredibly healing it is for yourself when you're supporting others and just showing up and being authentic for them. I think anyone listening to this podcast, whether you're on a train, you're in bed, whatever it is, just that one thing you can do to hold space. And hopefully what they've learned from this podcast so far is that it's not a big therapeutic place. You don't have to be from a therapeutic background to do that. It's about authentic connection. Just, you know, sometimes you have to be a bit brave to hold space. If someone's going through a tricky time, we're not quite sure what we may hold. Being brave and leaning in, and, you know, the reciprocation that you get back, but also that's really good for our own well-being.
Yeah. And it has a ripple effect.
Yeah,
it absolutely does. One of the young men, I gave him a wristband that says "Honor the Struggle" on it, and he says, "Tom, every time I think about the people that I see a wristband. It reminds me to honor their struggle, honor my struggle, and have more compassion and less judgment towards other people." It's just been really fun to hear those stories. And I have a website coming out in the future.
Yes, I was going to say, because at the moment, so you have theweightofgrace.com, which is the name of your book, but your not-for-profit website is under development. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's called honorthestruggle.org, and it's going to incorporate a few things. One, where do we start with ourselves? How do we gain self-compassion? How do we, because a lot of us have shame. A lot of us have anger
in ourselves,
and we feel like isolated and that we can't create meaningful connections with other people. You're not alone in that. I want you to recognize that. Yeah. And so the website is to help provide some really simple resources to help you gain self-compassion. And then after that, after you've looked inward, and have found your values, found your meaning for yourself. And then after that, then you look outward and it provides resources. It'll provide resources on how do I see other people from a more compassionate perspective?
Yes.
What are some things that I can do? And some of them, Tara, I'm not asking you to go do the same experiment I did. I would love for people to do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking how great that would be. Yeah.
For some of us, it's as simple as I see someone at the store and I tell them, you have a great smile.
Yeah.
Watch their smile just get twice as big because they had a genuine compliment. Find something genuine to compliment someone on.
And that's the key thing, genuine, because there's a lot of inauthentic things around. You know, we feel like tokenistic. How are you? Well, you look nice today. Or, you know, we're on to the next thing. That kind of pausing, taking time, noticing, being curious about people.
Yeah.
And I always say a lovely question I love is, oh, I've never noticed that about you before. Or you have a way of doing that. That's really interesting. Just little things like that actually can forge much more meaning.
And if it's genuine, they'll feel it. They'll feel it when it's fake too. Yeah. I remember one day was coming out of a store here called Costco. I don't know if they have those in Europe. But I saw a lady and I felt like I should tell her that she's beautiful. And she was in her late 60s. She probably didn't get that as much. And I said, hey, I just want you to know you're a beautiful lady. And she started crying. I hope I didn't. She's like, my husband just passed away 2 weeks ago. Wow. And he used to tell me that all the time. So thank you for sharing that. And it touched my heart because I created this meaningful connection with this lady just because I asked or complimented her on something genuine. So that's all I want people to do is find something genuine to compliment.
And it's as simple as that. But also the present moment awareness that it takes, that just stopping, pausing means that we can notice more in people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this very fast-paced world, especially post-pandemic, we've really shifted, I think, in how we connect with, you know, actual humans, not online. And sometimes for some people, they've almost forgotten how to connect and be and hold space. You know, the amount of times, I always think a lovely example is the amount of times we may see someone go, well, we still haven't had that coffee or that catch up, have we? And it's months go by, is the taking the time to go, actually, authentic me needs to meet that person and make the time. And it's sometimes just as simple as that, isn't it?
We haven't,
your book, I do want to, I'm going to get you on again to talk more about your story in your book, but tell us a little bit about what made you put, because I love the fact that it's quite an organic process, but what made you take that leap and go, right, I'm gonna get this book out there?
Well, it really was a learning from my pain and my struggles and turning it into something of real meaning and value.
Yeah.
There's a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Fantastic book that helps teach us the concept of finding meaning in our suffering. Instead of just fighting it, we find some value for it. And so I wanted to, for myself, I wanted to be able to find value and meaning in my struggle, my burden that I carried. And so the purpose of the book, the story, is to help people recognize that their burden can be used as something to find healing in, and then help other people. Now, Tara, I want to be clear. There is suffering that people experience that does not have positive meaning in it. Yeah. I acknowledge that. And those struggles that people can go through can still be utilized to help other people.
Yes. Yeah. And I've certainly had guests on here where, you know, they've had life-changing or ongoing situations.
Yeah.
But using that to support and help other people has actually been useful for them in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually that's quite an important thing to say, actually, that sometimes people, you know, there has to be resolution or closure on something in order to get to a point where we can then support other people. And sometimes, you know, I've had guests on where there's been something that's had a kind of a beginning, a middle, and an end, so to speak, in terms of adversity, and then they've used that to help other people. But then absolutely, I've had other guests where it's an ongoing thing, and there's been times where it's, you know, been difficult to even get out of bed some days, but finding meaning in that and sharing with other people has actually had a positive impact on them.
And don't let it stop you.
Yes.
Don't let it stop you from moving forward. Turn that struggle into something that, because people will believe you much more when you're still suffering from it.
And I was just going to say that sometimes there can be this kind of, I think because there are so many books out there where people have had this thing, and now that's happened, and now I'm using it to help other people. Absolutely great. But I think it does kind of perpetuate this myth that we have to be through something in order to then be the expert on how to manage it. And it really isn't about that, is it? And that's not authentic. We may still go back to things. We may have more struggles. There may be times where, you know, we've revised our relationship with alcohol, for example. I've had people who then have had a difficult time and have gone back to using alcohol, and actually that's the kind of people that we need to hear from. What happens when life throws you more adversity and your coping mechanisms change again, and having compassion for that, that's real and that's authentic, and that's the nature of the human condition. There will be times, as in ACT, we say you get hooked with your stuff, and other times where you may be able to get unhooked and take different course of action, but it's just about noticing when we're kind of moving between the two, isn't it? This is going bananas now. My dog's always decided to come in at the podcast. I will have you back on again to talk about more about your individual story, because I think there's too much for one episode. And what I don't want to do is to make this inauthentic by trying to squeeze it in one episode.
Yeah.
At the moment, if people want to find, while your non-profit website's called, you're on grace.com, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm updating them, so they'll be officially live August 1st is my goal. So yeah, if you want to see more about my nonprofit and about my story, they'll both be on both websites. But if you really want to focus on ACT therapy, how do I apply its principles in story format? Because you did such a great job, Tara, in talking about bibliotherapy and how storytelling can help people heal, because you're living vicariously through someone else.
Yes, I love that.
Yes, so if you're looking for bibliotherapy and a workbook, how do I apply ACT principles, theweightofgrace.com will be that one. And then if you're wanting to be part of Honor the Struggle and find ways to increase your compassion, then honorthestruggle.org will be available on August 1st as well.
And people need to, so maybe what people can do in between episodes is familiarize your journey, and then what I'll do is have you back talk a little bit more detail. Two really authentic episodes. I'm so sorry about my dogs barking like mad. I don't know what. Thank you so much. Because I know for you, it's still super early in the morning because you're in America, and I really do appreciate it when people very drastically different time zones make things work. And I know that you're super busy as well. But thank you, Tom. It's been brilliant. I knew this was going to be a great episode. So thank you.
Thank you, Tara. You're a good woman, great friend. So thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you. It'd be great.
Thank you for listening to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Quintarillo, and it's been lovely having you along to listen to this episode. If you want to find more about me, you can find me at drtara.co.uk. So you'll see everything I'm up to, my media work, my collaborations, my clinical work, if you're interested in that. And of course, all the other episodes of the Adversity Psychologist podcast. If you're interested in coming on, you can also contact me and let me know what you would like to come and talk about. I'd love to hear from you.